Now, Michelle, could you tell us more about exploring the self through digital avatars? Like what the connective tissue is between sort of our IRL, omnipresent physical self, and the vicarious online new self?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, a lot of people, so my research is mainly around how people do that in virtual reality, but I've done a lot of work outside of that as well, in just general games and other digital kind of environments. And really, a lot of that comes down to the experience of being able to have your identity expressed in the game sort of in an embodied way, which is to say, you are able to have this shape of yourself in front of you, and your movements or your actions translate to movements of that body as well. And that gives us a feeling of control and a feeling of agency and the ability to manipulate that digital world and then interact with other people, especially if you're in VR and you're being with other people. They'd be able to interact with them and have that experience of that body and that self be affirmed by those other people. It's a large part of those two things. It's largely social and largely physical. So having a body that reflects what you feel, and having other people see that body and say, that looks great, or you know, or that's totally fine with me.
Yeah, for video games to be a space where you can edit your identity in a way that's not possible with ease in real life. And Phoebe, why has gender euphoria been overlooked by the developers that design these games?
Yeah, I think a lot of kind of our trans history has been really damage centered. And so that's part of why we're trying to look at ways that games have kind of avoided the negative tropes and have offered experiences that are exciting and joyful and gendered at the same time.
Yeah, and this, can I ask, how did transness come to be interpreted through a gender dysphoric lens? Like, how did that come about?
I mean, I think if you look at sort of a lot of the history, right, a lot of it goes toward identifying trans people as a problem to be solved, right? There's a sense that, oh, there are these people and there are things wrong with them. And there's a need to create treatments, right? And so I think that's kind of a lot of how transness has come to be understood over the years. And then, of course, the way all of that interacts with our insurance systems and our medical systems, right? Because some people choose to medically transition. So there is that kind of piece of it, and it's all kind of tied together, because how do you access medication if not through doctors? Yeah, I think that's kind of the 30-second version of probably multiple books of
yeah,
history.
It's a hard
there.
History to condense.
I can add a little bit to that too. There was also a very strong period of time where the only way we were able to meaningfully create legitimacy for trans identities was to kind of tie it to that medical establishment, where there was, particularly in the 90s, people super delegitimized the whole experience of transness. And the only way to gain legitimacy was to kind of tie ourselves to, you know, DSM diagnoses. And now, unfortunately, we're having to go back around again and deal with that as, well, now this is part of our community and we need to kind of figure it out. So,
yeah, I mean, it's such a complicated history, and we've got new technology and ways of sort of changing that, and for people to be able to express themselves, like through these video games. Can you tell us, Michelle, can you tell us about the framework that you use for analyzing gender euphoria in these video games?
Oh, yeah, of course. Mainly what we were doing was digging through a lot of these games by case analysis. But I will say, sorry, I have to stick it right again. We actually used a framework called, I think it's DDE. It's generally called Design Dynamics and Experience. It's a way of breaking down games in, as part of your process, to take them apart by how they were designed. So explicitly, design being all the parts of the games that were actually designed and created intentionally. And then going into that, you have dynamics. And the dynamics are basically all the parts of the game that happened because of what you designed, and the player's choices that they've made because of what you've allowed them to do. And then you have experience. And experience is the experience that the player actually has as a result of all those dynamic places that the game can go because of what you've done. It's a way of centering the intentional design decisions that people make when they make games, and then figuring out from there, all right, well, then what are we allowed to do? What are we not allowed to do? And what kind of experiences does that create in the game?
Yeah, and I think that it's a really interesting case study to look at these because there are more games now and now that are aware of this and this desire to have be able to customize your characters in a way that reflects your own self. So seeing that in newer works as well. And I wanted to ask, how do design elements work towards a more inclusive, normalizing and meaningful playthrough for trans players?
Oh, I think a big part of what we saw in our data was around basically creating trans characters that are, they're just normal people. I mean, normal people in a video game, right? So they could jump really high and drive cool cars or whatever. But yeah, it was kind of this notion that in many of the games, part of it is that some of the characters are transgender and it's maybe not even commented upon, or you maybe have to kind of go out of your way to discover that. And otherwise, they're just normal people that you would interact with in the game.
Yeah, and I think a specific example that I can think of is there was a trans character in the recent Hogwarts Legacy game, and it's not a topic that's brought up, and it's the character's history is in no way relevant to their story, and they just exist, and it's not making a thing out of it. It's just a player being there, like how trans people and people of every gender and sexuality diversity exist in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Just like we're just normal people, right? You don't have to create some large whatever thing about it. And I guess maybe just to jump on that a little bit too, right? Our earlier paper was on dysphoria triggers, right? So the negative experiences, and a lot of those center around sort of like introducing trans characters, and then oh, haha, you get to discover that they're trans, and that's meant to be funny, right? Or degrading. And so it's like maybe just don't do that.
Yes. Yeah. Human decency. Be a good person.